Hi, welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with live in studio. We have Tamara Veach and Renny DeFazio. They're the authors of the One Great Year book series, and they're here today to talk about book number one called The Emissary. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us, Marie.
Yay. So we're broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus here in Vancouver, BC. And if you want to get in touch with the authors, their website is onegreatyear.com. So Renny DeFazio was born and raised in Canada, and he currently resides in Vancouver with Tamara, his loving wife. Renny is an actor and producer with more than 11 film and television roles to his credit. He's a world traveler and lifelong adventurer. And Tamara is a writer, a mural artist, and a mother of three. She also grew up in Canada. She attended SFU studying English and psychology, and she's had a lifelong interest in spiritual wisdom and has carefully researched ancient teachings from many traditions to ensure historical accuracy throughout the One Great Year book series. So thanks so much for being with us today. Can you tell us, first of all, I know you've been on the show before, but it's been quite a while, and it's so lovely to see both of you here in the studio. It's so rare that I have people here in the studio.
It's so great to be here, and UBC is so gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's so much fun to see all the kids learning and going to their classes and kind of stressed out on the steps while they eat.
Yeah. And we're in the brand new
It's
station,
gorgeous, yeah.
The
new station's gorgeous.
Beautiful building. Yeah.
Lovely, beautiful, and it's a gorgeous day.
It is beautiful. Yeah, oh my gosh. We're so lucky. If you're listening from elsewhere other than Vancouver, it's been really beautiful weather here, practically summer in the daytime and then cold at night, but really nice, yeah. So tell us, for people who didn't hear your previous interviews, what is One Great Year? What's it all about, and what is a great year?
Well, our Great Year story basically revolves around our two protagonists. One of them has past life memory, the other one does not, and pursues her from lifetime to lifetime. And they reincarnate through the Great Year cycle, which is a natural phenomena that occurs when the Earth spins one time on its wobble. For the Earth to spin one time on its wobble takes 26,000 years. It's written about in 31 ancient civilizations. It's in the Mayan calendar. It's called the Yugas in India. And Plato called it the Great Year.
So how we use the Great Year in our story, the emissaries start out in a golden age. So this 26,000-year cycle has ages. A golden age is a time when consciousness is really high. People have abilities like telepathy and communication, and there's not a lot of separation, that isolates people that we kind of have now. But the golden age, as it falls, it goes into a silver age, into a bronze age, and then into a dark iron age. And we, in our story, our characters are reincarnated through those ages as people that you recognize. So in The Emissary, we start out in an Atlantean type life in the golden age, and certain things happen. There's a calamity, and as that world descends, Marcus and Theron and their horrible compatriot Helgul are reborn over the ages, and they're in a battle between good and evil, and it's such a blast to write.
Yeah, and what the emissary focuses on within that Great Year cycle is this rise and fall of consciousness. So we are enlightened beings within this golden age, and then we descend into losing all consciousness within the Iron Age. And that Iron Age is when wars are prevalent in the world, and division, and all the horrible things that we experience as humans.
So is that what we're in right now? In real life,
it's really tough because there's about
give or
hundreds
take a few
years,
hundred years.
Yeah, that people, there is some discretion.
We did have to kind of decide though. So as we were writing the book, The Emissaries, book one in the series, book two in the series is coming next year, and it's called The Emerald Tablet. And we did have to decide where are we And we've kind of put ourselves in the beginning of the Bronze Age.
Yeah, that's
out
the
of
general
the
concession.
Consensus.
Most people believe that we are in the ascending Bronze Age.
So,
but
the
worst transitional period, yeah, that transitional period between the iron and the bronze is quite murky because the dark side is trying to hold on to their paradigm as hard as they can.
Well, and it's truly being uncovered. So if you look at our world today, all the things that were hidden from view, all the dark secrets in the cupboards, all the Weinsteins of the world, okay? Everything was pushed back, pushed aside, not spoken about. And only when you chase the spiders out of the corners can you clean out the house, right? So I think there's a lot of darkness being lifted up now into view, and it's going to have to be cleared out before we can keep going up into the bronze and silver and golden age. But that's like 13,000 years from now. So,
oh my gosh,
we got a way
to
go.
What do we do till then?
We be the light. So that's what an emissary is. Okay, so the emissaries were sent out 13,000 years ago to hold on to the light, to be the light workers, to hold on to the base principles of consciousness that we are all connected. What we do to the people around us, what we do affects all of us. And this idea that of selfishness and insulating yourself protectively is just fear-based, and that we have to clear out those fears and connect with other people to make it a better world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's big, lofty goals.
Thanks, Tamara. So you have done a lot of research on the Great Year Cycle and the, what is this, the Flower of Life?
Flower of Life on the cover of the emissary. It's the symbol for sacred geometry that we are all one. It's kind of the symbol in the philosophy.
Well, and it originates in cell division. So this symbol is found all over the world, also in some of the most ancient sites. And it begins with the division, with birth, with the division of the cell. And then it creates an egg sac, and that is the eight cells. And in a two-dimensional photo, it is life itself. So it's not a two-dimensional thing, but that's what the photo represents.
Yeah, if you could imagine that embryo, that eight-cell sac being hit with light from above, the shadow or light that it would cast on the bottom would be that two-dimensional image of the seed of life.
And it's just inspirational. And the strangest thing, it's, if you're out in public, it's almost like a calling card a little bit. That's why we chose it, because it's got profound meaning. People swear that they can have a breakthrough or an epiphany with sacred geometry, and those things, can be a big catalyst for change in their lives. But we found that, I mean, I have jewelry. It's on our wedding rings, actually. We ordered our wedding rings from Israel, and the Flower of Life is on them. But when people see it, they ask about it. And people who know it are instant friends. Like, they will come right up to you and say, I know that. I have that. Who are you? And how do you know it? And it's quite magical, actually.
Yeah, we learned about the seed of life from Druvalo Melchizedek, who wrote the Ancient Secrets of the Seed of Life, Volumes 1 and 2. And for us, when we actually got married, we actually got the opportunity to meet him.
No, that was, this is a cool story. So Synchronicity Radio has to hear this synchronistic story. So Drumvalo's book, Ancient Secrets of the Flower of Life, really inspired Rennie in his research stages of our book, and like the profound basis for The Emissary and the other books. So we're getting married. We have 14 people, just immediate family, at our wedding, and we went to Sedona and got married outside on an amazing place called Bell Rock. Our photographer, random, wasn't supposed to be our photographer. The other guy had to check out. Bonnie comes in, and she's our photographer, and Rennie happens to say to her, hey, you don't happen to know Drumvalo Melchizedek, do you? And he's a bit of a recluse, and, it's a big town. And she says, oh, I'm shooting. She's a photographer, not a shooter. I'm shooting him tomorrow night at a dinner. You should come.
Wow.
Yeah. So we got to meet one of Rennie's idols.
Which was fantastic. We actually got to sit and talk with him for half an hour. He's a wonderful guy. Very insightful. Lived an amazing life. If you ever get a chance to look at his work, he's done some incredible things.
And it's all about consciousness. It's all about, you know, breaking down the separation between people and letting people know that, you know, meditation and all these things that can settle down the noise of the dark age world that's constantly battering us. When you can settle down that noise and find a heart space and go to that place individually a little bit more on your own, it makes it all bearable, and it makes you a light. It makes you something in the world that can add a little bit more that's needed. And it's just love, really.
The evolution of consciousness.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tamara. So we're speaking with Tamara Veach and Rennie DeFazio. They're the authors of the One Great Year series, and they're here today talking about book one, which is The Emissary, and you can find them at onegreatyear.com. So who is the emissary? Is Marcus the emissary? Are they all emissaries? Who's the emissary?
Marcus is the emissary whose story that we follow within this book. But there are numerous emissaries that are sent out from the ancient land of Aditala. Now, Aditala is essentially Atlantis, except the name Atlantis has been
maligned.
Misinterpreted. And if you look back into the Indian version of it, it's called Aditala. Mm. So in Aditala, which is this conscious world, these emissaries are sent out like seeds to the wind to be planted, reincarnate, and leave clues for those who are ready to become conscious and awake.
The nice thing is that it's a very human story. So when we begin the emissary, it's not at the time of cataclysm. It's at the time where Marcus, the emissary, isn't an emissary yet. He's a young boy, and he is with his two best friends, Helgol and Theron. And so much happens to them, and they have an amazing adventure that defines who they become for the next 13,000 years and what they go through and how Helgol becomes the anti-hero. He truly becomes somebody that's a little bit confusing, but it makes us realize that we all have that potential to go dark, to be Darth Vader, you know, to be Anakin. You realize that within everybody, the choices we make and at key moments in our life can take you in one direction, but directions change.
Mm. All right. Well, we'll be back with more Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul in just a moment.
That ship out there will be smashed to bits. Use your emergency equipment.
It won't work. Nothing works.
It's got to.
It's no use. Everything seems to be stuck.
My life's worth a try anyway. Come on, fellas. You can make it.
Just listen to this. Spider-Man saves freighter. You can't tell me the captain couldn't have brought his ship in without the help of that publicity-seeking show-off, Spider-Man!
Don't get caught wasting power. Unplug cell phone, camera, and other battery chargers when charging is complete. Many electronic devices continue to use power even when you are not operating them. The amount of energy consumed by electronics in a year when they were not in use could power Whistler Blackcomb Resorts for 43 years. This Power Smart play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Have you ever thought about going abroad to study, work, intern, or learn a language? Mark Sunday, October 21st in your calendar and get down to the Vancouver Convention Center East Building to find out how. All the experts under one roof. Top universities, gap year specialists, and student travel organizations. Feature seminar on scholarships starts at noon and expo opens at 1 p.m. Admission is free. Check online at studyandgoabroad.com for more info.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are hanging out with Tamara Veach and Reni DeFazio. They're the authors of the One Great Year book series, talking about book one, The Emissary, and the website is onegreatyear.com. So if you're a regular listener of this show, you know that I don't really talk about fiction books very much, but we met, it was sort of synchronistic the way that we met and everything, and then you had wanted me to read the book. It was this big book, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll get around to it one day. And but then I finally read it, and as soon as I started reading, within the first couple of pages, I was hooked and really loved the story so much.
Thank you.
And now we've become really good friends, and that was quite a few years ago that we first met now.
That's right. We met in 2013. 2012. It was 2012, and we were just talking. We were at a conference where Constance Kellogg, who worked with Eckhart Tolle, was talking about their journey on getting his books into stores and all that kind of stuff. And I was following Namaste Publishing, who you do some of
the social media
for. So I was following. You know, communicating with you on social media, and you introduced yourself, and I went, hey, hold on. So, yeah, that was fun. And
that sounds like a scene in our book, actually.
Another synchronicity, yeah.
Exactly. Eden and Quinn, same way they met. They were conversing back and forth on email.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Yeah. Before they finally met.
That's how so many people meet these days now, yeah.
Well, we met online.
Yeah.
Oh,
my
husband
that's
and
right.
I. Yeah, my co-writer.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
I liked how he wrote. And I was not out running around in the dating world. So, yeah, it was quite synchronicity, meant to be.
Amazing.
What website did you meet on?
Oh, I hate to say it. I don't think it's one of the upscale ones, but it was back then. This was 2009. We met on Lavalife.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think, are they even around anymore?
I think they are, but I think it's a lot more hookup oriented.
Things change.
Which I was not.
Yeah.
So, but I thought it was a little scary back then because you were still quite judged, especially, you know, we're not teenagers. Social media and social online dating was still a little bit sketchy, but it worked out for us. I highly recommend at least getting out there.
We actually spent a lot of time traveling together after that.
Yeah.
And I think the best way of getting to know anybody is to travel with them, because it's kind of a microcosm of all of the experiences you will experience in life.
Yeah.
That you experience traveling. And I don't mean vacationing in Mexico or Hawaii. You know, like, we were out in the jungle.
Adventuring.
Like, how they deal with adversity and challenge.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and tarantulas and snakes.
Yeah.
And
well, the neat part was it really did contribute to the writing. So the weird thing is we met in March and we started writing in September.
Wow.
And it really was more than anything, we both knew we were creative types. We both knew that we had this passion in us to, you know, Reni was brilliant. Idea man. So he had all these screenplays and all these ideas written down, and he'd been an actor and a producer and had done, you know, some amazing work. And I love writing, but I didn't have that idea that just blew my mind.
But I could never write like Tamara writes. I mean, Tamara is a wordsmith. She finds the lyrics in words, and it's like music when you read.
Well, that sounds pretty lyrical and nice to me, what you just said.
It's true.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, we're you also have an audiobook. Should we play a clip?
Okay, let me just set it up a tiny bit. Rennie, as I said, was an actor. For us to be able to do the actual voices, the narration and the voices in our book was amazing. And he just took it to a whole nother level that authors can't usually do. I know
you don't get a great flavor for all the voices in it. In this clip, but there are like 13 different voices in the audiobook, and that was so fun to create.
Yeah, you got to listen.
So this is Helgol. This is talking about Helgol.
He's the bad child. Guy. This is his experience that kind of changes his trajectory in the world.
All right.
Helgol discovered countless Atlantean-filled chambers as he searched for his friends, planning how they would approach their host to convince them to help save the inhabitants of Aditala. It was growing hotter, and as Helgol got closer to the center of Inner Earth, he found it harder to breathe. The straight tunnel had grown wider than any he had seen thus far, and the light radiating from the end compelled him to get closer. Helgol was amazed and confused by what he saw. As he neared, the passage was lined with Arya. They were oblivious to his presence. He did not understand that they were absorbed in a regenerative daily feeding. It was eerie to see them as they floated immobile above the ground, their eyes closed and their faces basking in the life-giving light. There were thousands of Arya with their backs to him. He was moving cautiously, wondering how to approach them and ask for help, when he received a clear telepathic message. "Do not disturb them," it warned. Helgol froze, engulfed by a powerful wave of fear that was alien to him. A shadowy figure shifted behind him. It had been following his every move. "I have awaited your arrival, Helgol," the stranger said telepathically. His handsome black face was difficult to make out in the diffused light, but his eyes were bright and focused. He was human. Helgol's throat and chest constricted, and his heart swelled with rapid, panicked beating. Terror gripped him, and his intuition prickled his skin, washing him in chills. He was feeling intense fear for the first time in his life, and his mind and body revved in confusion as he struggled to identify the stranger, to calm his rush of emotion, and to decipher the intuitive jolt. "Who are you?" Helgol asked, feigning fearlessness and wishing to rid himself of the uncomfortable feelings. He wanted, more than anything, to appear confident and brave, but he also wanted to run. Helgul's distress was plain to the intruder, who was taking the ill-mannered liberty of accessing the boy's thoughts without permission. Helgol unsuccessfully tried to expel the man from his mind, but the stranger continued shuffling through, causing him to squirm uncomfortably. "I am Black Elder," he replied. Helgol was shocked by the revelation, and it expanded his fear rather than appeasing it. He looked past the elder. His passageway was blocked. He would either run directly into the mass of feeding Arya or into the formidable force before him. "Ah, yes. I see your confusion or your turmoil. Certainly a child born into the golden age cannot understand. It is fear that you are feeling. An emotion among others that you will know well in the coming ages. You are wise to be frightened of things you don't understand."
So that was a clip from One Great Year.
Woo-hoo. From The Emissary.
Oh, sorry, The Emissary. Of the One Great Year series.
That's right.
So the series of all three books is called the One Great Year series.
Yeah.
The first one is The Emissary. The second is the green...
The Emerald Tablet.
The Emerald Tablet.
Mm-hmm. And the third, we haven't released the title yet.
It's a secret.
It's a secret. But it's really, really, really
but
good.
You all know what happens, right? Or are you still unfold? Okay.
Yes. We know what happens. Book three is... Book two is finished. Book three is...
First draft is done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we it's so great because each book goes in a completely different direction. So you think you know what's going on in the first book, and then the second book spins it, and then the third book turns it on its head. So it's fun. It's a great adventure fantasy movie.
And it's a romance. I think when Rennie first pitched it to me, it was this story of Marcus and Theron being soulmates, and having him having memory and her not having memory, and him pursuing her and just thinking about what that would mean, what angst that would cause, having, you know, lifetime after lifetime, you know everything. Life's tough.
But he doesn't have as much, like, Helgol. So Helgol's the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he has full memory of everything. Does Marcus have the same level of memory, or does it kind of fade in and out?
It fades in and out, depending on which lifetime. Sometimes he gets bits and glimpses, and sometimes he has a little more. But it does develop. He doesn't have anything, neither of them have any memory as children, because they need to amalgamate to the time period, to the culture. And it starts to come back around 12, 13 years old.
And we don't always have it come back the same way. I mean, we really tried to set it up that, people might have it. It might come in dreams. It might come in flashbacks. It might come, in a moment of stress. Something might trigger it in a totally different way, a non-stressful way, a beautiful way. So it's like real memories. You know, you might smell something and it brings back something good, or you might hear something and it makes you panic right away. But yeah, we tried to make it authentic.
So I know, I mean, this is 13,000 years after, like, present day is 13,000 years after their golden age. And after all this, Helgol goes down into the depths and becomes the bad guy.
Yeah.
So you're obviously not going to be able to cover every lifetime that they have over 13,000 years. You've just kind of selected. But I'm just thinking about imagining what that would be like to not immediately have memories and then to start having these memories, and how confusing that must be to have these memories of, like, so many other lifetimes. And
you're right. And that's one of the questions that we address in The Emissary is it a blessing or a curse?
Yeah. And Marcus truly is a tortured hero. I mean, he does have, it is a huge burden to not only have memories, but to know you have a job to do. I mean, it's hard enough when people have a sense that they should be doing more in their life, and they become dissatisfied because they're like, oh, I feel like I should be, you know. Marcus feels like he should be and knows he should be. You know, so present day, when he's incarnated as Quinn in present day, he's a pot smoking blogger, and he's jaded. He's a little beaten.
Yeah,
down.
He suffers from PTSD, because he's just lived 1,200 years of war, and he doesn't forget all that he's seen, and it sticks with him, and he can't get it out of his head. And he can't find his soulmate. He's really lost.
And he doesn't want to attach to a lot of other people other than his soulmate, because he knows the transitory nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's known enough grief in his lifetimes to kind of go, listen, it's not worth it. But then he does experience it, and it is worth it, because it's never for nothing, mm-hmm. You know. We do there. The message ultimately is hopeful. It's not, but it's honoring that even, you know, the sages of the world can feel a little bit lost and a little bit sad, mm-hmm. and just need that extra hand to hold.
Thanks, Tamara. So I'm curious now. He doesn't connect with Theron in every lifetime, right? Like, they're soulmates, but they don't always bump into each other.
That's right. I think what happens is there's lessons to be learned when you're not connected. And sometimes those connections aren't always positive. And that's where the greatest learning is. And I think that's what we try to point out in The Emissary, is that we don't need somebody else to find our purpose. And I think Quinn is searching for his purpose. He's aware of his purpose, works towards it in spite of his suffering.
I don't have anything to add to that. That was very good.
So what are, in addition to that, what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned through just the process of writing this book, these books?
I think the one that sticks with us the most is what Socrates has said 2,000 years ago, and is that I alone know that I know nothing. And I think the research that went into this book, it took us 9 years to write this book. And we had to ask ourselves, what would a 13,000-year-old man know that the rest of us do not? And in seeking that answer to that question, we went into science and we went into theology and we went into philosophy, and we found a thread that goes through all of them. And the learning that we incurred in writing this was life transforming, but it's also a transition. You're constantly learning, constantly changing, constantly evolving.
Yeah, and I love that you brought up that quote from Socrates, because it's so true. That my mom told me when I was 20, when you get older, you'll realize that you don't know everything. And it's so true, because I think that when you start learning new things, you think that you've learned it. Like, oh, that's how it works. And that's only how it works from one perspective. And I think the greatest thing that I've learned along this process with Rennie and as a mother and a friend and an almost 50-year-old person now, I've learned that you never have anyone else's perspective, and your perspective can change tomorrow. So, and it helps us in our writing, because then you are looking at situations from multiple perspectives, and you don't judge then. There's a lot less judgment and a lot more empathy and compassion. And that, you know, is my goal in the world, is to bring more of that to the world and less of the other stuff.
Beautiful.
Very nice. And very true.
So we're here with Tamara Veach and Rennie DeFazio. They're the authors of The Emissary, which is from the One Great Year book series. So we have another clip here from the book. Should we play that now? Or
sure.
What do you think?
Yeah, sounds great.
Do you want to lead us into what's happening here?
So this happens later in the book when one of Marcus's lives comes to an end, and he is passing from one lifetime to another, and he's not ready to go. With a whisper, Marcus was no longer in Inti's arms. He was no longer Sertania. His perception changed, and Marcus was watching from above. His child, Inti, his soulmate, sat below him crying, with the dead shell of the High Priestess in his arms. No, I can't leave. I won't go, Marcus thought. Inti needs me. He's alone. Marcus's spirit had separated from Sartania's devastated body and was slipping away, his shine pulled away from Theron's, but he struggled to stay. Marcus was determined to re-enter the body. He thrust himself back into Sartania, but her lungs could no longer hold a breath, and her arrested heart would not cooperate. This vehicle was beyond repair, and his spirit could not restart it.
Wow. So Marcus is incarnation is a mother.
Mm-hmm. And his soulmate is his child.
The child. And Helgul's still there, right? And he's dying now.
That's right.
And the child doesn't have any knowledge.
Exactly.
Of this. And he can't, now he doesn't know where he's going to be reincarnated. It could be on the other side of the planet.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah. And is there a time difference for, so he passes away, how quickly until he's incarnated again somewhere else?
We've never made any hard and fast rule, because once you go down this rabbit hole into the matrix and reincarnation and the spiritual journey, time becomes something that's very earthbound and linear, and that we use, you know, on in this world to understand and to make our appointments and to have our birthdays and do all those important things. But does time really exist? We could, like I said, there's a whole nother rabbit hole there, and maybe they all happen simultaneously, past, present, and future.
Have you seen the movie Arrival?
We have seen it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loved
kinda
it.
Kind of that's, oh.
Yeah. So
how they worked with sound. That was brilliant.
So the neat thing is that Rennie did do a lot of research in quantum physics. And he's read books that bore me to shredded tears. But I get the Coles notes from him. And we have a bibliography in the back of our books, which is very rare for fiction. But we think that the actual knowledge and the work that went into this, a lot of people will find interesting.
Yeah, I think we tried to base the story on as much science as we could. And this stuff is out there in numerous books and has been studied, has been documented. So we've written all those books in the back of The Emissary. Yeah. So if people want to follow up on the information, it's there for them to find, as we did.
Well, and we've had people say to us, you know, are you trying to say that reincarnation is it? This is how it works. We are not trying to say anything. This is a fiction story, but we want it to be as accurate as possible if this is how it works. So there's people like Dr. Ian Stevenson, who has done thousands of scientific
case studies
into people that have past life memory, and that where they were able to go into that person's life and find evidence of the person they say they were, like children. So it's really neat. His work's amazing.
Yeah, he's actually gone to people that have been reborn, went back, they were murdered in their past life, have gone to the murderer with the police, and that murderer has confessed to the murder. He's also gone to places where he hid money, buried it. They dug up the money and he gave it to his wife from his past life, so she would have it.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
his work
some neat
is
stories.
Quite amazing. He's
and
got
he
over
went into
3,500
it as a, yeah.
case studies.
He went into it as a scientist saying, if reincarnation happens, there should be evidence. We should be able to get proof, or we should debunk it. He didn't care either way. He just wanted to study it. And yeah, really interesting, really good stuff. So we read that stuff to create our world, you know, and I think you said Shirley MacLaine's book back.
Yeah,
when
Out
it
on
first
a Limb,
out,
which was
an inspiration.
I think she led the way on all that reincarnation stuff. I think that was written back in the early 80s. And we actually got a chance to
get her a book
and send her a thank you note, because she was in town doing a movie here in Vancouver. And we actually had people that were working with her and got her the book. Yeah. And she sent us a nice little note, which was, you know, these little moments that happen and have happened continually for 9 years in writing this book. These little signs that you're on the right path, as it were. It's quite lovely. And I just wanted to add one thing about the clips that you've played, the audiobook clips. If any of your listeners are interested, we have created storyboards for those clips, and they can be found on our website at onegreatyear.com. Just look at the vlog at the top of the page. And
trailers are there.
Trailers are there. They're also on YouTube at One Great Year.
One Great Year Novel, I think, is the channel.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I think it's time for a break. We are speaking right now with Tamara Veach and Rennie DeFazio. They're the authors of The Emissary, which is book one of the One Great Year series. We'll be back with more Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul in a moment.
I am Neetu Da, and I am the host of Convictions and Contradictions, otherwise known as CEC. And if you look in your car, your phone, your computer, or whatever device you're using to listen to this, you know that I mean that ironically. Listen in every other Thursday at 8 a.m. to the only radio show that's ever been subtitled. Probably.
Have you ever thought about going abroad to study, work, intern, or learn a language? Mark Sunday, October 21st in your calendar and get down to the Vancouver Convention Center East Building to find out how. All the experts under one roof. Top universities, gap year specialists, and student travel organizations. Feature seminar on scholarships starts at noon and expo opens at 1 p.m. Admission is free. Check online at studyandgoabroad.com for more info.
If you're one of the millions of Canadians who experience depression, anxiety, or some other form of mental illness, there's a free course that can help. The Wellness Recovery Action Plan is an evidence-based program that works. It's developed and facilitated by peers who have experienced their own mental health challenges and have used RAP to recover and maintain long-term stability. It's based on the key concepts of hope, personal responsibility, education, self-advocacy, and support. For more information about the free RAP groups hosted by Vancouver Coastal Health, visit their peer-led website, spotlightonmentalhealth.com.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we're speaking with Tamara Veach and Rennie DeFazio about The Emissary. So where were we? We were talking about past lives, reincarnation.
So much exciting stuff. People ask us all the time, Marie, oh, do you have past life memory? Do you? But the most amazing thing, when we've been out in the public and people have read our stories, the amount of people that come to us and say, I've never told anybody this, but, and they tell us about memories and they tell us about something that happened in their life or something that they remember or how the emissary resonates with them on a personal level. We get emails. This is my story. This is our, like, I get this. This, I've lived this. And they're not, I mean, one of the guys really stands out for me. He was about 70 years old. He was Scottish. And he literally said, I have never told anybody in my whole 70 years about my past life memory. But I want to tell you guys.
Wow.
And you just think, wow, that's pretty amazing. And why would that be fake? I wish I had past life memory. I think I have a few flashes, but
I don't get anything.
Yeah, I don't have, I don't know.
I only did, for the research for the Emerald Tablet, I had, there's one lifetime during World War II that stands out really profoundly for me. And it was I cry a lot during the writing, and there's certain parts of the books that I, like the scene, one of the scenes that you just read, that the scene where Sartania dies and leaves Inti. Mm-hmm. I cry every time I read that because so much heart went into it and being a mom and just, you know, everything that's attached to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's been amazing. I just lost my train of thought where I was going to go with that. Sorry.
We've had some unbelievable reviews from people. And the reviews on The Emissary have been outstanding so far.
We're blessed for sure.
We feel very fortunate. But people have said that this book's changed their life. It's given people purpose and clarity for their own lives, which you couldn't even ask for a better review from a reader.
No, that's true.
Well. So how does that feel?
rewarding. It feels like, it really feels like we found our purpose. It really, the epiphanies that have happened with this book for us has changed our life drastically, I think.
Well, we've, I remember in a recent interview, because we've been getting a lot of blog interviews over the last couple months because of the new release, and somebody just asked us, you know, what really stands out for you guys as the biggest risk in being writers? Like, what was it that you had to do? And it was a day, you know, I turned to Rennie and said, quit the day job. You know, it's enough already. We have to, we can budget, we can scrimp, we can do what we need to do. We will live within our means, but we got to write full time to really make this happen and commit to it. And I think that anybody who can possibly do that, be fearless, because you have this, you know, we're talking about reincarnation, and then I'm going to say you have this one life. You have to treat each life like it's only yours. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. It doesn't matter what all the shoulds are. As long as you're not harming anyone else, go with your dreams. And
I remember Eddie Murphy saying that. Mm-hmm. You know, he was asked, how did you realize this was the job for you? And he goes, you know, the only way to make it in this business is to throw yourself 100% into it. Don't give yourself a plan B. That way you will discover the ways to make it work. And that's always stuck with me. And that's what we did. We 4 years ago, we quit our jobs and we've been working nonstop on the books. No plan B.
But you say, so thank you for sharing that with us, Rennie and Tamara. You say you got to be fearless, but I mean, there's got to be times when it feels scary.
Absolutely. Sure. you definitely run the gauntlet of emotions.
Yeah.
But in, again, that's where the learning is.
You know what, though? I think we're very fortunate because we're at the stage with this work where Eddie Murphy was. There is nothing else. I would rather live super humbly writing, doing what I love, than be absolutely rich doing a job I used to do that wasn't my purpose, that wasn't mm-hmm. my soul, that wasn't my creative flow. So I'm willing to sacrifice a lot, and somehow we haven't had to. It's been incredibly blessed. I mean, our kids do their sports, and we have a beautiful home, and we live in Vancouver. We live in the Lower Mainland. It's been amazing. And I think that when you do follow your purpose, it can be risky and it can be scary. And at times you'll think it's not working. Like, I can't believe it's not working. And we had one of those times. I'm going to give you another synchronicity. Okay. About a year and a half ago, a year ago, we had a moment, and I literally turned to Rennie and said, bawling, and said, I can't believe it. It's not going to happen. Mm. Like, we've been working on this book, and something sort of had gone sideways a little bit with a publishing deal at that point. And I went, it never occurred to me really that it might not happen, but it might not happen. We got a call during that conversation telling us that our publisher came through and that we had the deal. During the conversation, I really hit my rock bottom and was panicking as the phone rang said to them,
that was amazing.
I just lost hope, and here's the hopes all back. Aww. So
you follow your purpose and the universe conspires to help you.
Or it'll correct it and help you find your real purpose.
That's true.
That's wonderful. So with the 26,000 year cycle, you said that you've done like so much research on this. So what evidence is there of this golden age and moving down into the darker ages?
So there is a textbook out called Hamlet's Mill. And in that book, it's outlined in 31 ancient civilizations, and it what's so neat about it is these ancient civilizations had no contact with each other. And they've described this 26,000-year cycle in ancient civilizations that had no contact with each other. That alone is so much evidence that there's way more going on than
if you look at the work by Graham Hancock, Fingerprints of the Gods. He doesn't talk about the Great Year cycle necessarily, but he talks about history being far older. Mm-hmm. That there were civilizations, very advanced civilizations, long before we're supposed to have had civilizations. In Turkey, in the last 10 years, there's a site called Göbekli Tepe, and it was discovered in a farmer's field, and it was completely buried in the sand. Now they've uncovered it, and they've carbon dated it to 10,500 years old. And it's advanced. It's like architecture and carvings and buildings that they shouldn't have been able to make yet. So there's a lot of evidence. There's evidence on the Sphinx in Egypt that the striations from the water wear and the erosion far older than the 5,000 BC.
And there's discoveries, too, that they found. There's the Antikythera mechanism. Now, this is a clock kind of mechanism that shows five planets, the rotation of five planets. Now, it was found or went down in a ship off of Antikythera in Greece. They found it when they were sponge divers, looking for sponges. Sponge divers found it, and it shows the eclipses, and it has 3,600 gears or something in it. 1,800 years before gears were even thought of existing in the world.
It was found in the 50s, the Antikythera mechanism. It was in a shipwreck from 100 BC or 100 AD. So the ship went down.
It was around the time of Christ. It was apparently there. And so that's at what, zero?
Yeah, 100 BC, I think it was. But yeah.
And it's the most amazing. It shows the four-year cycle of the Olympics. It shows the moon cycle.
So the point was is that in the 50s, when it was discovered in the shipwreck, they didn't know what it was. They had no idea. But now, because we have technology that can look inside of it, they can X-ray it, they can see that it has all these gears and it has all this technology that was not supposed to be around 2,000 years ago. And it was. So where did it come from? We didn't discover those things for another 1,500 years. So where did it come from? Mm-hmm. So there's lots of... There's Yonaguni under the water off of Japan. It's a whole civilization, possibly, that might have existed that's now underwater. So,
well, if you look at what happens during wars and things like that, is that the people in power tend to destroy the knowledge. Because knowledge is power. So it is entirely possible that we had all of this knowledge that every time someone really bad got into power, they just wiped out all of the knowledge.
Absolutely. Right. So you think of Alexandria Library. So there was a very famous library in Alexandria, Egypt, before, when was this, like 2,300 years ago, and it burned to the ground. And inside of that library, they had collected scrolls and books and writings, and everything had been collected there. All the knowledge of the world was being housed there, and it was intentionally destroyed. You're right. Knowledge is, there's sites all over the Middle East right now being destroyed by ISIS.
And the first emperor of China did the same thing when he connected all of the warring states in China. He burnt all the books back then too. So all this ancient information has been destroyed, but there's pieces of it finding. Like the I Ching, for instance, is an ancient Chinese book. they found it in a tomb that made it 2,000 years older than they currently believed. So all this information is starting to come. There's a great, great video on YouTube called The Great Year by Walter Cruttenden. It's read by Darth Vader himself. So it's a great introduction to The Great
James
Year.
Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones.
I hate
Jones
when he does that. He looks at me like I'm going to just pull that name out
I
of my
just like saying Darth Vader.
Cool. So we'll have to check that out on YouTube. So we've been speaking with Tamara Veach and Renny DeFazio about The Emissary, which is book one in the One Great Year series. So you can go to their website, onegreatyear.com. Where's the best place you want people to pick up the book?
You can get it anywhere. You can go to your local bookstores. Indigo Chapters Canada is going to be carrying it. We dropped off a copy at Banyan Books today for them to have a reader copy so they can order it in. It's available everywhere. If it's out of stock, it's because we're reordering more stock. So please put your orders in, and we're definitely delivering books, so it will be coming quickly.
Cool. And what about the audiobook?
The audiobook is December 4th, but the Kindle's available right now, always available too. So you can do that through Amazon, Amazon.com, Amazon.ca.
Cool. Well, we just have like a minute or two left in the show before DJ Chris Horrific is up with Parts Unknown in just a couple minutes here on CITR. So thanks for being with us today. So is there anything else that you'd like to add before we say
sayonara? Well, we definitely want to say that you are amazing. And I think the work that you do here with Synchronicity Radio and caring about mind, body, and soul and sharing all the information with the world, with all the people, with that there's happy options. There is hope. There is good things coming. And there's also community. And it's really important to reach out, even if it's online. We're always talking to our everybody on social media. We respond to everybody on Facebook and Twitter, and I'll do it ourselves. So, you know.
And the sequel comes out in June.
Yes.
The Emerald Tablet
will be out in June. The Emerald Tablet will be out in June. So it's not too long. It's less than a year. So.
Okay. And so it's One Great Year on Twitter, One Great Year on Facebook.
It sure is.
One Great Year novel on YouTube.
Yeah.
And the book is called The Emissary.
Emissary. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being with us today. Thanks to Tamara and to Renny for being with us live in studio. It's been
Yay,
so long since I've seen you. And thank you for being with us this hour. I want to send you so much love. Be well and have a wonderful week. Namaste.
High school is not free in Kenya, East Africa. As well as tuition fees, families must find money for uniforms, including shoes, textbooks, calculators, dictionaries, pens, pencils, and more. For poor, rural families earning the equivalent of $2 to $3 a day, this is often an impossible challenge. Will you help educate bright, very poor Kenyan youth to help them find a road out of poverty for their families? Just $50 a month will allow that to happen. Gifts of smaller amounts can be combined to give youth a chance through KEEF, the Kenya Education Endowment Fund, a registered, BC-based, volunteer-run educational charity. Tax-deductible receipts are available. Donations make great gifts for Christmas, graduation, anniversaries, promotions, etc. Gift cards are available. More information at www.kenyaeducation.org or you can call us at 604-415-9397, day or evening.
Slow down.